Hi, this is Jill Schlesinger, CBS News business analyst, certified financial planner, and the host of the Jill on Money podcast. Beginning, middle, or end of the year, it's always a great time to take control of your financial life. And the Jill on Money podcast is here to help. Your questions make it possible for me to provide unconventional and entertaining insights on your money and, more importantly, on your life. Follow and listen to Jill on Money wherever you get your podcasts.
We're back with more Inside the Clubhouse with Bruce Levine and David Haw on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, presented by Bet Rivers Sportsbook.
Thanks for listening on this Saturday morning. We're broadcasting live from the Hyundai Score Studios. I'm David Haw with Bruce Levine until 11 o'clock, and now we have the pleasure of going to our guest hotline presented by Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. And that is where we find the White Sox assistant general manager in charge of player development in minor leagues, Chris Getz. Good morning, Chris. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you guys doing?
Doing well. Appreciate you joining us this morning. And I know we want to talk about the minor leaguers and the system and player development, but let's start with something that, obviously, if you're a member of the White Sox organization, you had to think it was worth staying up for last night. When you see a victory like that, 1-0 over the Giants, Lourdes Garcia comes through, two outs, two strikes in the ninth with two runners on, what potentially can that do for a team?
Well, I mean, first of all, you're playing the San Francisco Giants, one of the better teams in Major League Baseball. You know, we're on the West Coast, and sometimes playing in time zones can affect a ball club a little bit. But Lance Lynn had a tremendous start, and you know, we competed to the end. We caught the break with Pollock hitting the ball off the bag. Lourdes Garcia comes up and gets a big hit. So, you know, you take a win, first game of a series against the Giants, you know, on the West Coast there, and you hope to take that momentum into today. I mean, our guys are competing, clearly. I think, you know, it's been frustrating not being able to really reel off a lot of wins in a row, but there's a chance that that's about to happen. We're optimistic. But we know this group is staying together. They enjoy playing with each other, going through this battle, and hopefully overcome some of the adversity we've been faced with.
Chris, always a pleasure having you on. Thanks for taking some time out today to join David and myself. When you look at the humidor and you look at home runs being down across Major League Baseball, how impactful has that been on the Chicago White Sox? We know injury has impacted you quite a lot, and you know, that's certainly a factor. But for a home run hitting team like the White Sox, what impact do you think that's had on them, both on the field and psychologically?
You know, it's tough to exactly measure. Certainly has been a factor, just not hitting the home runs that we used to, or at least impacting the baseball like we have in the past. But, you know, we've been without Eloy Jimenez for most of the season. Yoan Moncada's battled some injuries. Grandal's obviously injured right now. We still need to go out there and put quality at-bats together. We're capable of doing that. We've shown glimpses of doing that. And I think as we get back home here, getting a nice rhythm with this team, there's a chance that more home runs will come. But, you know, we don't want to focus on that too much. That home runs are a result of the correct process, you know, within it at bat. So, and we know guys are doing that. That's what we're preaching. And I think it's a matter of time before our offense really starts to show what they're capable of doing.
Chris, I'm glad you're with us. I'd like you to, if you could, take us through the Lenin Sosa experience last week, because I feel like when he was promoted and he skipped a AAA step along the way to Chicago, there was excitement. And then I think maybe from the fan base, maybe from the media, maybe it was overstated. I don't know, but maybe you can tell us, because he comes to Chicago and then it's two games before he starts. And then he starts and, you know, he leads off, didn't have a great day. He bats ninth the next day and does a little bit better. And then he goes back pretty quickly once Yoan Moncada came back from injury. Overall, how do you classify that experience, and what was the thought process in bringing him back to skip a step to bring him to Chicago, and yet it was probably two games before he actually got into the lineup as a starter?
So I'd prefer to start with, you know, the year that Lenin has had. You know, looking at the last couple years, certainly a prospect that we believed in. We knew that there was more offensive potential in there. And this offseason, he spent time at our academy in January with our AA hitting coach, Charlie Romero. There were specific mechanical changes that he was able to make and apply quickly. Goes out to AA this year, and, I mean, he was one of the best, if not the best, bats in that league for a 22-year-old. And you look at what he had done in terms of cutting strikeouts, getting on base, in-zone contact, lessened his chase numbers, and he had 14 home runs. He was hitting over 330. We've got a guy that can bounce around the diamond, can play some shortstop in second, third base. He's got tremendous makeup. Nothing phases him. So when there was a need at the major league level, we look at around who can help us win. Who's got the, you know, what does he bring to a ball club? We look at this guy, this guy, this guy. Lenny and Sosa stood out. I mean, this guy can help you in a lot of different ways. You know, he gets the opportunity to come up there. You know, it played out the way it did. But the way I view it, this is an opportunity for Lenny and Sosa to get a taste of Major League Baseball. You know, he stood at second base. He stood in the box. He got his first hit. And, you know, he's back in AAA. And, you know, he got three hits his first night. He got two hits last night. So, for me, as you're trying to grow these players, these prospects into major league players, I thought it was a tremendous opportunity to just to accelerate it even further. Did I feel like he could help our major league club? I did, of course. A lot of people did. But more than anything, I think this is just going to make him an even better baseball player to help us at the major league level.
Chris Getz, our guest for a few more minutes, assistant general manager, director of minor leagues for the Chicago White Sox. And Chris, I guess as a guy who took a lot of pride in his defense and that you were, you know, a complete player because of that, you weren't a flashy player, but you were a very good major league player. I guess the frustration of watching a White Sox defense at times is difficult for me, and you hear about it from other people out there. Is that a product of playing too many close games or a defense that's just been mediocre?
It's a little bit of both. I mean, if you put, you know, night of me out there, there's not going to be a lot of runs scored. Maybe you don't make many errors, but you're probably not going to win a lot of games. We've got some, you know, there's different shapes and sizes of players, guys that have a certain offensive potential, and they might be a little lighter defensively. You try to put the group together to really complement the, whether it be the pitching side, offensive side, what have you. So there are going to be times where you're going to be frustrated based on the personnel that you have. I do think it's a byproduct of just close ball games. But also we've got some, you know, lapses out there. I mean, it's a difficult thing to do to play 9+ innings out there and remain focused. That's the demand of the job. These guys need to, they're capable of doing it. They need to stay on top of that and just lessen the mistakes. Now, it shows more when you've got close ball games. Can you just point to this happened, and this happened versus a 12-6 ball game where those things probably happen. It's just we're not talking about it. But we need to tighten it up. And I think we're capable of doing that. We believe in these players. We do. They've had success before. We've got players that are going to be returning from injury. We have Liam Hendricks, that's not too far off. Eloy's down in AAA. He's playing in the outfield, and he's finding his rhythm. He had a couple walks last night. There's a lot to believe in and a lot to still be excited with this team. And, you know, we're not even at the halfway point. So I think it's important for us to remain optimistic and continue to find ways to make our team better.
You mentioned Liam Hendricks, you mentioned Eloy, and given your experience both as a player and now as an executive in charge of player development, can you help us understand the difference in approach or the difference in maybe strategy in having a player, a position player like Eloy, spend as much time as he is in Charlotte kind of regaining his swing and getting back into form, whereas Liam Hendricks, a closer, yesterday, when it was announced he was coming back, he's coming back to the major league team. He doesn't need to spend much time as a rehab stint at the minors trying to regain that command.
Well, you look at the body of work for each player. You look at Liam's case. You know, he's played a lot this year. He's pitched a lot, and he really hasn't been down that long. And you know, he's a guy that, you know, you're asking to get, you know, 3, 4, maybe 5 outs. When he's healthy, he's got the experience. we feel like he can plug right back in there and help us win, close out ball games. Eloy, when you're talking about, you know, the in the box defensively, the type of injury with his legs, he needs to get comfortable with where his legs are at this point of the year. And he's doing all those things. So we don't want to rush him. Certainly from a health standpoint, you want to make sure that there aren't any setbacks. And then, of course, you want him to be productive when he gets back here. So, you know, last night he had a couple walks. He's obviously seeing the ball better. He had a home run not too long ago. And we'll continue to build there, get confident in the outfield, and plug him back up here. And just having his presence, both of those guys, having them in the clubhouse together, you know, on the lineup card, it can do a lot to a team. And, yeah, certainly look forward to having both those guys back.
Chris, balance in a lineup is key. Having really good hitters, as I'm reminded by Rick Hahn and Kenny Williams many times, is more important. But can a team win without a left-handed slug in the lineup to, you know, augment and to, you know, bring the potential out of the lineup that's needed on a daily basis? I mean, you guys have been hit by injury with Grandal, certainly Moncada, you know, Sheets had to be sent down. The left-handed pop, how significant is that in a lineup just to have that type of balance to win?
I mean, an ideal lineup, it's certainly, you know, balanced, both left and right. And you know, like you said, having some lefties in the lineup that can drive the baseball, it just adds protection. You know, it allows you to be a little bit more creative. But at the end of the day, you know, you've got to go out there and find ways to win with the club that you have at that certain time. And if that means it's going to be right-handed heavy, so be it. Doesn't mean we can't go out there and find a way to win a ball game. But, you know, as we always look to improve, you try to get the lefties, you know, within our organization to be able to help our major league club. And if not, we'll seek something from the outside. So, you know, that's our job to focus on it in the front office. And then you've got the coaching staff and the players that just need to go out there and try to win that night. And, you know, as a group, we're going to find ways to go out there and try to improve this ball club so that they can go out there and hopefully reel off some wins for us.
Chris Guest joining us for a couple more minutes here on Inside the Clubhouse on 670 The Score. Chris, okay, there have been some bright spots in the minor league system this year. I wonder if you could briefly update us on three guys in particular whose names are familiar to White Sox fans. Colson Montgomery, Oscar Colas, and Yoki Cespedes.
Yeah, I mean, Colson's just had an excellent season. He's on a pretty significant streak right now, an on-base streak that I believe is nearing 40 games. You know, he for a guy that, you know, was juggling two sports, hadn't played a lot of consistent baseball, you know, transitioning into professional baseball, playing every day. You know, his temperament, he's so under control, both defensively and offensively. He's getting on base. He's driving the baseball. There's just no panic at all. He understands that this is a marathon. So in terms of the ups and downs that are presented your way as a baseball player, he handles it like a veteran. It's been really fun to watch. You know, we just challenged him with a move up to Winston-Salem. He hasn't skipped a beat. And, you know, now he's playing with Oscar Colas, another player you bring up. He's an exciting player. He's got power to all field. He's got great hands at the plate. I've been impressed with how he's played center field. I knew he was a guy that could handle the corners with a big arm, but he's a guy that's been making an impact defensively. So you've got a, you know, center field potential, can move the ball around the diamond, drive the baseball, just an active, competitive player that it's been a joy to be able to watch both Colas and Montgomery play together here, you know, in the last week or so. And Cespedes had a pretty solid year. You know, his defense has been consistent. He's got some pop. We're looking for a little bit more consistency with the bat. Big, strong player. He just needs to believe in his strengths. Doesn't need to try to do too much, and he'll be able to drive the baseball and catch up to what the pitcher's throwing at him with velocity and moving the ball around the zone. But three guys that we remain excited about and look forward to watching it play out the rest of the year.
Chris, we know the injury has taken its toll on the major league team. Give us a heads up. Have any injuries impacted any of your minor league players that you were looking to move up? And where are you at with that right now?
You know, knock on wood, we're in a pretty good place injury-wise. Certainly there's been some guys that have gone down with some injuries and missed some time. You know, Jorge Vera was a guy that, you know, had an injury right before spring training got started, and we wanted to make sure foundationally he was in a good place. Took our time. Thankfully, he's down in Kannapolis now, and he's beginning to build up his workload, and he's got some starts under his belt. It's an easy upper 90s fastball with a slider and changeup. You know, we've had, you know, Jonathan Stever's a guy that, you know, the White Sox fans have seen in the past. He had a lat injury that ended his year last year, and he's building back. But for the most part, we've had the core of our minor league group. They've been able to get out there and have quality seasons, going out there and playing and naturally develop. So fingers crossed we can remain healthy, and we can put 2022 in the books, and these guys can move forward and prepare for a championship season next year.
Yeah, we're only halfway through this season, Chris, so I think that, you know, when you look at things to examine, ways to reflect, I think we might be a ways away from that. But I do wonder, when you see the outbreak of injuries at the major league level, and obviously a lot of the other teams in MLB are going through the same types of things because of the nature of spring training and how compressed it was, but do you anticipate studying a connection between, you know, the injuries at the major league level and what you might need to do throughout the system in terms of an overall approach or a consistent approach to either conditioning or a regimen or changes that need to be made to avoid these kinds of injuries throughout the system?
Yeah, you certainly, you know, when you have the load of injuries that, you know, Major League Baseball has endured, you know, as an industry, I think we all kind of work together and try to find ways to improve. Obviously, we've been hit with some significant injuries as well. You look at all the data points you can. Is it a programming issue in terms of, you know, the performance team and the strength coaches? Is it a scheduling? Is it scheduling throughout the season? Is it spring training? Is it the 12-month calendar year? It was a unique off-season where there wasn't any communication with our players. We had a spring training that was certainly shortened. We were playing a full season, so there was adjustments to the scheduling. There are a lot of different factors. We will look at it all, and I think as an industry, we try to fix it, and internally we'll do the best we can to try to find improvements. Baseball, it's a long season, regardless of, you know, coming off of a lockout, you know, coming off of a 2020 that was a unique year. There were just a lot of unpredictable things that happened. That doesn't mean that we can't make adjustments moving forward. I hopefully in the coming years, things smooth out a little bit, become a little bit more predictable, and as a high performance team, we can go out there and keep these guys healthy.
Robo umpires, your experience watching it. A story came out this week saying it's a matter of time before it comes to the major leagues. Chris Getz's thoughts about robotic umpires behind home plate.
Yeah, we've had the ABS system in Charlotte, so we've gotten a fair amount of experience with it. To be honest with you, it's been a positive experience. It has. I mean, just the consistency that we've had, and we've just had it at our Charlotte stadium. And, you know, talking to our pitchers and even our hitters, they've appreciated the consistency. From time to time, you'll get feedback from catchers that are, you know, skilled at perhaps stealing some strikes. They don't like it as much because they felt like they were benefiting by taking advantage of some of the umpires. But as a whole, you look at it, there's certainly some positives. I know that, you know, Major League Baseball is looking at some different ways to use ABS. It's been talked about to have a challenge system. They've used that in the Florida State League. There's talk of using that in Charlotte here shortly, and perhaps they'll spread it out in the minor leagues. I haven't experienced that yet. I think it's a unique concept. Open to it, but I'll have certainly a better judgment once we experience it for a little bit.
Before we let you go, got to wonder now about the effect pitch clocks are having on the development of young pitchers and how, you know, not everybody's Johnny Cueto. Not everybody's able to kind of change the rhythm and adjust it as easily as he does. He does that by design. But, Chris, when you see young pitchers, the effect that the pitch clock has on command, on anxiety, on whatever it is, if they're rushing their mechanics, have you seen that? And what do you anticipate if indeed Major League Baseball adopts a pitch clock, as many expect?
Early on, I was fairly skeptical. You know, the first few games that it was implemented, there was some distraction, and you know, players that felt like they were rushed, and balls or strikes were called against the hitter or a pitcher. You know, but the players have adapted. They have. I do think that there's perhaps a little adjustment in the time, but as a whole, you know, it really hasn't been a deterrent from a development standpoint. You know, resetting both as a hitter, as a pitcher, is important. I think it can still happen within the time frame that's given. The game is moving. You know, it certainly cut off a significant amount of time. I think the fan experience has been a positive. Certainly you don't want to have a negative effect on the development of players. But I think that there are guys, and just from kind of watching and even looking at some of the underlying information that we're getting, you know, there has been player improvement. There has been, the fan experience has improved as well. I think there is something there. And before we know it might be at the major league level. We've seen it with guys that have been called up that are now conditioned by this clock. And I you know, I'm a guy that does feel like these games have gotten a little too lengthy. The time between, whether it be in the box or in the mound, has gotten, you know, a little out of control, where I do feel like getting on the mound or getting in the box can be a positive for everyone involved.
Chris, thanks for your time. Really appreciate it.
You got it, guys. Have a great fourth.
Yeah, thanks, you Chris. Too. Have a great 4th of July. Chris Goetz, the White Sox assistant general manager in charge of player development and the minor leagues. A lot of interesting stuff there. Colson Montgomery, Bruce, is the number one rated prospect, I think, in their system, and is having a phenomenal summer season. He's, I think, been on base 37-38 straight games and is just really looking as good as advertised.
One question before we go out: is Chris Goetz the next manager after Tony La Russa is not there, or a general manager for some other ball club?
That's a really interesting question, and I think you probably ask it for a reason. He's got the personality and the temperament and the relatability that you could envision him being a very good manager, right? And maybe likes the day-to-day grind, because he seems like a grinder, and he was like that as a player. Easy to like as a White Sox player, member of the Royals as well. What do you think? I think probably executive is more manageable for your day-to-day lifestyle and just quality of living, perhaps, but maybe that is a lure that he can't resist.
The one problem is he's got a career with the White Sox in his role right now. When you become a manager, the next step after manager is, I'm going to another organization and starting over again. But I think Chris Goetz would be a terrific manager, just because I knew Chris a lot as a player. I've gotten to know him well as an executive. He's got the whole package. As you hear, and why we like him on the show, he's a great communicator, and he doesn't really pull any punches. He's very direct.
That's why he's a good guest.
But the message is a good message. So from my perspective, he is, with all due respect to Robin Ventura, he is very qualified, more than other managers in the past that the White Sox have hired to be the next manager of the White Sox when Tony La Russa is done managing the Chicago White Sox.
That's a great nugget, Bruce. I hadn't expected to go down that road, but now I'm going to be thinking about it. I'll probably bring it up Tuesday when back to work, and I will credit you. I won't steal your thoughts. I don't want to do that because
you'll be the first one. You'll be the first.
All right, let's shift gears again and go back to the Cubs. Their catcher, Yan Gomes, having a pretty good season, qualified behind the plate, handling this pitching staff. We will talk to him next on Inside the Clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
We're back with more Inside the Clubhouse with Bruce Levine and David Haugh on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, presented by Bet Rivers Sportsbook.
Thanks for listening this Saturday morning. David Haugh, Bruce Levine here, Inside the Clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Time now to go to our guest hotline presented by Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. That's where we find Cubs catcher Yan Gomes this morning. Good morning, Yan. How are you?
Good morning, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks for joining us. Appreciate the time. We know you're a busy guy. Let's start with just how this season, how you have viewed playing in Chicago for the Cubs. You've been in, you've had major league stops in Toronto and Cleveland and Oakland and Washington, D.C. How does Chicago compare as a baseball town, given your experience?
Oh, I mean, there's nothing that compares to it, man. Getting the excitement of coming to the ballpark and getting to witness 30-plus thousand people every game, and definitely something I can definitely get used to it, and it's been a great time. The fans here are amazing. City's amazing. My family is thoroughly enjoying it, and if my family's enjoying it, I'm enjoying it.
Yan, when you had the decision to make in the offseason. I know you had other offers. Why the Cubs, and what was your perspective about what these 2 years might look like when you signed that deal with them?
I mean, first, it was just what a chance and opportunity to come play in Chicago. There's nothing like it. Definitely put that in at first. The conversation with my family, and it became a very easy decision.
Yan, we're having a little trouble with your phone. We're going to try to reconnect with you. Try to reconnect with Yan so we can get him on a better line.
Yeah, and he came to the Cubs in the offseason. We'll try to connect with him, Bruce, and he came here with the idea that he would catch a bulk of the games, half the games, and Wilson Contreras would be able to be a designated hitter more, maybe play. I don't think the outfield makes a lot of sense. It's pretty crowded there. But Yan Gomes was brought to town in order to make Wilson Contreras more versatile and keep him more rested in terms of throughout the season, because that was a problem and he didn't have another option like Yan Gomes offered.
Right. Well, looking at how he's played, and then the ascension of Higgins, P.J. Higgins, that has given so much flexibility to the Cubs, and nobody is overworked. You see Contreras leading the All-Star voting again, David, this year, and going to round two. He's obviously going to be the All-Star starter this year for the third time in his career. And a lot of it is attributed to the depth that they have at that position, which was a weakness for them last year. I mean, it was not a good situation where the Cubs went through eight backup catchers in 2021.
And now it's a position of strength. And Yan, as we get you back here, how would you describe your dynamic with Wilson Contreras going through this season and what you guys have combined to give the Cubs, make that a position that they feel very good about?
Oh, absolutely, man. It's been an absolute pleasure getting to see it firsthand, the kind of talent that he has, and really just trying to communicate as much as I can. I knew my job coming into it was to keep him on the field as much as possible. The kid, you know, he's got tremendous talent, and it's, you know, coming to fruition this year. As much as I do get to play, or I get to just chat with him and talk to him, I'm here to help him grow the game and just keep him fresh coming to play every day.
Yan, you played for some of the best managers in baseball. I wonder, you know, you probably have, you know, 3 or 4 years left in your career, but is managing something that you would look forward to doing? I understand, you know, you have a great reputation in the game and knowing that you're a great communicator and have all this knowledge. Would that be something you'd be interested in, or is that not a part of the thought process at this point in time?
I know, coming towards the back end of my career, you start, start wanting to think about the future. I don't know, maybe being part of the game would still be, in my head, but, I feel like, I have a growing family now. I want to be fair to them and, you know, have dad back home and raising them. But, if that opportunity comes, it would definitely be something that I definitely would think about. I don't know if, like, the full managing part would be, because I like to just be involved in everything. And I know managing, there's a lot that goes into it, and it's not an easy job. But
talking with Cubs.
Yeah, but if the opportunity does come, I'll definitely think about it.
Yan Gomes joins us here on Inside the Clubhouse. And, Yan, you handled Kyle Hendricks to the point where after every start he seems to compliment you when things go well. You have young pitchers on the staff like Justin Steele and Keegan Thompson, just to mention a couple. I just wonder, when you approach each game, how different is that approach? How different is the game that you will call based on who's on the mound, whether it's Hendricks with all that experience, and they call him the professor for a reason, or a guy like Justin Steele or Keegan Thompson, guys who might not know yet how to get that command. How different is your approach?
Yeah, like you said, like there's guys with experience and there's guys with potential. I think you definitely have to treat them both differently, because there's a lot more background from Kyle facing some guys. You definitely want to listen to, you know, his experience against certain people, but also you're wanting him to not have to think so much on the mound. That's what I take pride in my job, is to take over a game and just making him trust me that I'm, you know, trying to, you know, from whether it's from studying or just viewing things that that sometimes, I mean, I am making the right call, or, you know, I have a very, you know, I trust the call that I'm making based on his stuff. And I, you know, it's something that it does take a couple of outings, but, you know, we've kind of hit a good streak. But also it just goes back to just communicating with him. You know, we tend to, during games that he pitches, we, and I'm talking about Kyle, we talk a lot. You know, sometimes I can get kind of annoyed because I just really want to, like, nitpick everything that we're going through on the game plan, because that game plan can change, you know, from pitch to pitch. But, you know, when you have guys with talent, such talent as, you know, Keegan and Steele, you're really just trying to get them to simplify and really trust and believe in their stuff, and not trying to, like, you know, overdo it, overthink it, because, you know, that can get a lot of the younger pitchers in trouble, and it will maximize what they have. You know, these guys have plus pitches in all of their arsenal. So you're just trying to get them to really truly believe what they have, and you know, just be more aggressive and be always pitching ahead in the count.
Jan, your thoughts about the automatic umpires and the technology moving toward that. What would that impact be for you as a professional and as you as a baseball fan?
Well, as a professional, I think that's going to take away the art of catching and framing. I think that's been finally being put at the forefront for catchers. Guys are taking more notice of catchers that can manipulate pitches better or present pitches better, and which gets a calls. I think that part's going to go away. From a fan standpoint, it's just the human element of the game is being taken away. I'm not a huge fan of the robot umpires, but at the same time, if that does happen, you know, we're going to have to make adjustments to it. And you know, I can go on and on about you know, the strike zone and what it's going to look like, and which no one knows, but. Can't say I'm a huge fan of it, but as the game goes on, we will make adjustments to it.
Yeah, and before we let you go quickly, I wanted to go back to the dynamic with Wilson. He is a guy who obviously not a young catcher anymore, but I wonder if somebody with your experience has talked to him about ways that whether it's framing or calling games and just working with him and improving his approach defensively behind the plate.
Sure. You know, conversations with Willie, he is definitely one of the a veteran catcher already. He's definitely shown and that he is an elite catcher. For me, in the conversations that I have with him, is just to almost just to keep him calm. He's an extremely emotional player, and there's some times where that can get a little bit out of him. But his emotions show, and he gets better. He cares so much about the game, and you can definitely tell within every pitch, every out, or whatever it is. He deeply, deeply really cares about the game. The only thing with catching is that we don't get to hide out there. So there's we don't get to take pitches off. And not that Willie has any trouble with that. Sometimes when things are speeding up, he wants to get all three outs all at once, and that can get us as catchers in trouble. But I can tell you I've been extremely impressed with, you know, getting to back him up and getting to communicate with him and watching the way he carries himself. He's truly one of the best players in the game, as long as he lets himself be.
Jan, David and I appreciate your time, especially with your family here for this weekend. Thank you so much for making the effort. Look forward to seeing you out at the ballpark as usual, okay?
Absolutely, guys. Thank you for having me. Sorry for the little trouble earlier on.
Absolutely,
that's
fine.
Okay, Jan. Thanks very much, care. Jan Gomes, Cubs.
Jan Gomes of the Chicago Cubs. And David, that wraps up our show for today. Have a great holiday weekend with you and your family and all of you out there, all our listeners. Be happy, be safe. People can follow me on Twitter at MLB Bruce Levine. Also, I write Cubs and Sox on our website at 670thescore.com.
Thank you, Bruce. Another great show, another fun Saturday morning with you. And thank you, everyone, for listening. Thank you, Cesar Perez, for keeping us on the air and on time. Thanks to Chris Getz from the White Sox. Thanks to Jan Gomes from the Cubs. This has been another fun show. Have a happy 4th of July weekend, everybody. We will be back here, Mully and Haw, on Tuesday morning at 5:30 until 10. Look forward to that after a big, busy baseball weekend. That's it for us. Inside the Clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Looking for something smart, soulful, and full of heart? I'm Jen Hatmaker, host of For the Love, the podcast where we talk about what really matters. Love and family, faith and purpose. Every week, I'm joined by incredible guests for honest conversations that invite all of us to live with more intention, more laughter, and more connection. Join us on For the Love wherever you get your podcasts.